Welcome to Steps to Value, the only podcast focused on providing you with examples from across the industry of healthcare organizations optimizing their health IT investments. Hi, I'm Rod Pihowski, Senior Director of Health Information Systems at HIMSS. In this podcast series, you'll hear from the people on the front line of the digitization of healthcare, the people who make the decisions about the application of health information technology. You'll learn what works and what doesn't. Those people will share the strategies, tactics, and innovative approaches they've used to achieve high levels of value from their health IT investments. In the first few episodes, we're exploring the importance of value in the current healthcare landscape and providing an overview of the HIMSS HIT Value Steps framework. We'll first become familiar with the vocabulary and structure of the framework. Today's episode focuses on the first topic in the STEPS framework, satisfaction. We'll hear from HIMSS fellow Greg Wolverton. Greg is CIO at RCARE, and RCARE is a Davies winner and MRAM Stage 7 community health organization. Greg and I talk about how health IT has provided greater satisfaction to both its patients and providers. And we'll also talk with Jonathan French, director at HIMSS. He'll highlight the great work our Davies Award winners have done on that topic. And finally, Margaret Schulte rounds out the show with value stories focused on satisfaction. All that coming up in just a moment. Today's program is brought to you by the 10th Annual National Health IT Week, being held October 5th through the 9th. National Health IT Week is a collaborative forum where public and private healthcare constituents work in partnership to educate industry and policy stakeholders on the value of health IT for the U.S. healthcare system. National Health IT Week and the HIMSS Policy Summit, being held on October 7th and 8th at the Hyatt Regency Washington on Capitol Hill, provide an opportunity for all healthcare stakeholders to unite under one banner, expressing the benefits that health information technology brings to U.S. healthcare. One voice, one vision. Learn more about the 10th Annual National Health IT Week at www.healthitweek.org. Today we're joined by Greg Wolverton. Greg's the CIO at RCARE and Kentucky Care, and Greg also leads a knowledge management system staff, which delivers services to over 60 sites in Arkansas and Kentucky. Greg's organization has also been recognized both for being an MRAM Stage 7 organization and a Nicholas Davies Award of Excellence organization. Greg, welcome.
Thank you very much, Ron. Happy to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we want to talk about value, and I know that organizations like yours have had to grapple with the question of value all along, and one of the things we kind of want to get at here is, you know, the strategic thinking behind this, but we'll get into a couple more details too. But I'm curious about how does health information technology integrate into your organization's long-term strategic planning?
Absolutely. That's a fantastic question. You know, early in the days, IT was never a part of any strategic planning, and that shifted as you know, the need for more value-based care comes in and we start working with ACOs. We find ourselves, as most CIOs and other people representing HIT, actually sitting at the table. As far as RCARE, it's a very important part of our company strategy, period. Long-term and short-term decisions are based upon data collected from our systems, financial, billing, patient health outcomes. And, you know, our new strategies are based on population health and the metrics that surround population-based care. So we can support value-based purchasing efforts, our ACO efforts, and things of that nature. So data is definitely king anymore in this environment. And any strategic planning at RCARE, HIT has a place at the table.
Well, that requires some long-term thinking. It's not just a matter of being reactive to the current state of affairs or the requirements that some agency might be requiring out of you. So how do you kind of get out ahead of that and think out? Do you have a 5-year plan? Is it a 10-year plan?
We try to work between a 12 and 36 month plan. So 36 months being the outside of what we consider long term at this point in time with health information technology changes, and 12 months still being kind of a short term but kind of a long term viewpoint. So it's really a compressed model, if you will, as far as strategic, where a lot of people are looking at 5 to 7. We're out looking at 12 to 36 months or 1 to 3 years. So looking at that, we have a team that looks at it. We have a change management team. And we bring a multidisciplinary group together once a month, and we really think about where we want to be next month, next year, 2 years from now. Good example was we had planned our ICD-10s go live. Well, we were able to put it together and look outside and see when we needed to do it. And we actually went live with ICD-10 about 3 weeks ago. So we were able to put those things together before the deadlines so we could have a chance to respond.
Was the ICD-10 transition challenging for you?
No, it had a challenge to it. It really did. And I don't think it was from a clinician perspective. I really think it was more about getting the basic understanding from everybody. You know, ICD-10 is a different animal for us. So we had to put system time, make sure we were getting enough information and had enough items mapped, for instance, in our care plans and in our different templates and things like that that we use for different order sets. So ultimately, the project, we ended up mapping about 72,000 codes. So it was an interesting project, to say the least.
And has it been successful so far in the week since you've been live?
Absolutely. I would say we had challenges the first week. We had less. We had issues the second week. About 2.5 weeks into it, we were able to declare, a success. At least we weren't getting any calls and everybody billing was happy. So, but just the unique challenges of trying to take one code, put it to a different code, with yet another code residing in between them. So it was certainly challenging.
Well, I think that's I hope that's instructive for others, to know that even a Davies winner and a Stage 7 organization still has these challenges. You don't have everything figured out. And it's, it sounds like regardless of the project, you kind of have to invent a process and a strategy in order to succeed on that.
That's absolutely correct, Rod. I think there is no vendor that, in my opinion, anyone could have better than the team that currently exists in each of our organizations and companies to drive this change, because that's really what it's about. But it's also about making sure that we can get it as seamless as possible and also as transparent as possible, for our users.
So let's switch back to value a little bit here. How does your organization approach the whole question of realizing value from the health information technology? Is it a component of your strategy?
Absolutely it is. I go back to the first thing when we first started in our conversation was looking at, years ago, 5 years ago, HIT was not a part of the strategic planning process. Well, now where we're in to say, how do we drive value? In the past, it was merely, what can you do ROI upon? Well, we've since evolved and perhaps gotten more mature and looked at these various ways that we can look at ROI, not just from a money perspective. But again, one of the things that we do is we've been able to utilize the HIMSS value suite over the last years and been able to look to say, okay, where can we look to find value? And it's helped us identify value. Patient satisfaction is huge. I mean, and we've gone from satisfaction to more loyalty. Yeah, we realize you may not have a good experience maybe this time. Maybe you were sick. Maybe something didn't work right. Maybe you were late or something. But are you loyal and would you come back? So I think that's one of the things, improved communications with our patients, making sure our providers and our staff and everybody else is satisfied with the things that we put together and encouraging them to be a part of it. For instance, we started with Yammer, for instance, which is an internal social media product that we use. So we can get lifetime feedback. you're really not learning anything if you're not able to get feedback in a timely manner. So if we wait till next year before we do a survey to find out what's going on, well, we're not going to find out till next year, and therein drives even more issues and problems. So that's just one area, and we go on down to the, you know, our quality of care, our safety, you know, our efficiency, and, you know, also our data. I mean, we've gone to more anecdotal information to everything must be evidence-based, not only our medicine, but also our data and our reporting as well.
Well, it sounds like you've got a formal program then to measure patient and even clinician satisfaction. Is that true?
That is true. From a patient perspective, we're using the HCAHPS ambulatory survey to at least gauge where our patients are, and then doing some anecdotal surveys actually in the clinic setting to find out. And it would surprise us. We also get a lot of information and feedback from the patients just through our patient portal and the information they send us, you know, about, you know, where they got better or they didn't get better, or they like this or they don't like that. So being able to utilize that information at least in a lifetime manner certainly strengthens our position and strategy, but it also helps us react more rapidly to things that we may have to change and not wait for that next 12-month cycle. We can really drive it monthly if we needed to, if we needed to make a change real quick. And all these things in our mind add to savings, you know, in the financial and business. You know, how much do we save in efficiency? How much can we save in our overall operations in terms of our shared savings work if we decrease the cost of healthcare, but we improve disease states? I think that's the most important savings and the most important attribute that we can get out of this.
You mentioned the portal, and you know, it sounds like there's a feedback mechanism in there. Can you share with us any examples of something that you may have learned that made a huge difference in being able to help, you know, from that feedback mechanism to either help improve the satisfaction of staff or patients?
Absolutely. I'll give a good staff example. You know, our staff have to be, our staff are users too. They use our health information technology every day, more so than the patients do. So one of the feedback mechanisms that came back, I'll go back to a Yammer example, was we put some new workflow out there on a patient check-in process. Immediately, within 3 minutes, I mean, we were having, I believe it was like 16 staff respond back, explaining that we actually missed a step in actually the check-in process. And we wouldn't have known that otherwise. It would have been, I mean, it probably would have been 3 months before we went back and reviewed that cycle again. From a patient perspective, we really did have a, you know, we're not without fault and we're not without issues. I think no one is. I think it's how you respond to them that makes the difference. The patient said, well, they couldn't get signed in on a portal, so they were sending, you know, support emails and things like that. After a while, we finally figured out what the thing was it was very simple. We didn't have the submit button was disabled on the website, so they wasn't able to sign in. So these things like that, of being able to have this almost a 360 feedback, if you will, that for us is imperative. And we just, it also is making the patient or all of our users, internal and external, a part of our process.
And it's amazing too how sometimes it's just something so simple as the submit button isn't working properly, and it affects everybody's experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just they expect to have a complete experience in terms of process. They expect everything to work correctly, and that's internal and external. And when it doesn't, obviously, you pull the chain on the production line. Everything stops. Nothing's going to work correct. So we always try to optimize everything as best we can. And again, that lifetime feedback is very important, because the quicker we get the information, the quicker we can correct the problem or the issue.
So I'm going to throw you for a little bit of a loop here. Greg, you're also a member of the HIMSS User Experience Committee right now this year. Could you share with us a little bit of your thinking? And we know you're measuring clinician satisfaction, and you've got this feedback loop, and you do it on the patient side as well. But for the people who use it every day, what's the role of the usability and the user experience, and how is our care and Kentucky Care approaching this, and how do you see that fitting into your longer-term vision?
That's a very good question. Actually, it's a complicated question because it sits on various levels right there. One of the things that we have is our care in Kentucky's care mission is health for all. And there's five pillars to that. So, you know, what we're trying to engage is every part of that. And when we say health for all, that includes our patients. That includes our staff. That includes our systems. That includes our organization. So how do we bring everything together and look at satisfaction as it relates? Well, it is very difficult, but what we try to do is put a scorecard in place to where everybody understands what is going on. They know the expectations on the front end. So we hope, with them knowing the expectations, there should be no surprise on the back side of it. Having said that, just access to the data, access to the information is so valuable. It's something that most clinicians and most patients have never seen or never had before.
So if your clinicians are satisfied, what does that do for our care?
Oh, well, if it's kind of like if mama's not happy, nobody's happy. It's the same kind of deal, you know. Everybody gets, the providers are excited because they're saying, hey, look, let me show you this right now. The patients are saying, that's cool. Hey, doc, guess what? I got on the portal last night and I saw where you sent me that message about my hemoglobin A1C, or I got that education piece, or you know what, I got that doggone text about you reminding me of my appointment. I appreciate you taking the time out to send that. That makes our providers happy, that makes our patients happy, and when we have that, we're increasing value, we're increasing participation, and at the end of the day, the most important piece is we're getting our patients and our providers involved in the care, not in unilateral fashion, but in a bidirectional manner to where everybody is speaking and everybody's on board and everybody just seems to be so happy about that.
So we have about a minute left. In that time, Greg, could you share with us your thoughts on what's next and around value, and is there a particular area that you hope to improve your numbers, or is it a population health thing? What are you looking at next in order to really get more out of your IT?
Yeah, you know, the next big thing for us is going to be population health. I spoke to that a little bit on the first. With value-based care and the accountable care organizations and all the things that we're dealing with right now, population-based metrics are very important. We've been very active in the CDC's 1 million hearts program. And that's made a true difference in how we look at things and how we end up, you know, looking at things and establishing the running of it, just simply because it's a lot of information you're bringing in. So really, our next focus is a shift from treating the individual patient to treat the patient's health population, whether that's diabetes, hypertension, and also bringing in new tools such as a new tool that we're bringing in that's attached to our Pop Health item is a interactive messaging system through text or email and even phone calls that we can interact with our patients, such as send a message when it's time for if we have somebody that's non-compliant because they just simply may be elderly and they forget. Well, we can send them a text or make a phone call to say, hey, Miss So-and-so, it's time to take your metformin now. And ask the question, have you taken it, yes or no? And if they answer no, it's going to drive information back to our staff. Maybe we need to contact this patient to find out what's going on. So I believe that's the future.
Well, it sounds like you've built a great foundation to work toward that. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And I hope we have an opportunity to talk to you again in the future. Greg Wolverton, CIO of RCARE and Kentucky Care. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Rod. I appreciate it very much.
So, Jonathan, welcome. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Here's the question for you. What's the link between quality measurement and achieving value in satisfaction? How do those two link up? Can you go into that for us today?
Sure, Rod. Well, as you know, patient satisfaction is usually a byproduct of not only improving their clinical care and outcomes, but also improving their experience as a patient. And specifically, you know, I've had some personal experience with being admitted to the hospital because of an emergency room visit. And there's very little that's as stressful and as frustrating for a patient as sitting in the waiting room, especially if you don't know what's happening, but you know something is wrong. And improving that, improving the processes required for speeding up that patient's not only being admitted to the or brought into the ER and seen, but then to have decisions made on whether or not the patient needs to be hospitalized or follow-up treatment are a very effective way in improving patient satisfaction. So I wanted to share with you some examples from one of our Davies winners, if you would like to hear a little bit more about that story.
That sounds great. The Davies cases are always filled with lots of really good information.
Excellent. So the Davies Award Program recognizes organizations that have demonstrated value that's sustainable over time, that's enabled through the use of technology. And one of our organizations focused specifically on the issue of patient wait times, getting them from the ED waiting room to being seen by a physician, and then ultimately having the decision made on whether or not they need to be hospitalized. And their focus, as I spoke to in the last episode, was to measure how long those things took and then build workflows designed to improve the average time from entering the waiting room to being seen and then ultimately entering the waiting room to being admitted to the hospital if needed. They built workflows that are enabled through technology designed to improve those processes. They used a tracking board to track each little element that could potentially lengthen that time period, whether it's automating their order sets, just red flagging that a patient hasn't been seen, perhaps is being overlooked, you know, multitude of different, discharge, time to discharge. There are all kinds of little nuances that are being tracked on that board. But ultimately, they're all driven towards improving that door to being seen and door to decision about hospitalization metric. And for the organization in question, St. Clair's Hospital in Pittsburgh, they were able to reduce both by nearly an hour. And imagine if you're a patient for a moment, that unknown, waiting there for an hour, not knowing if you're having a heart attack or you've just got indigestion. And I went through that myself. That is a stressful experience. And having to wait that extra hour, are you, if you're trying to make a decision on where to go have surgery done or have some kind of a follow-up procedure, I'm probably not going to come back to that hospital if I've sat there for an hour. And so St. Clair's tracked those numbers. They saw significant decreases, again, an hour in both of those metrics through their use of EHR and use of the technology to facilitate all those process improvements. And the end result, which was fantastic, Presagini, as you know, measures patient satisfaction, and St. Clair Hospital finished in the 99th percentile nationally. So very impressive on their end. Those are happy patients. Those are patients that are ultimately going to come back. And the end result is also you have providers who are in the right place at the right time. They're not wasting their time, so you're improving provider satisfaction as well.
That's really impressive. And we have time for a quick question. When they did this, did they discover any one thing that was really eating up a lot of time and creating this mess? Was there something that they uncovered as the aha moment?
There were a couple of examples. First of all, it's just having the information readily available. Providers and nursing staff were not having to go around looking for information. The amount of time for orders to be processed, lab imaging. You're having to go to different places to get that information that was being pulled together. Again, all available on the their patient management system, first of all in the center room and then also in the patient's room. And those facilitated quick decision-making, and as we both know, that quick decision-making helps the patients in terms of if they're not having a real emergency and there's the, you know, relaxation that comes with finding out, hey, I'm not dying. But if a patient is seriously at risk, that quick decision-making could save their life.
Makes a huge difference. Jonathan, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for sharing your expertise once again.
Thank you.
Margaret Schulte joins us to share some value stories each week. Margaret and her team oversee the Value Suite data collection and will highlight examples of successful organizations in their HIT value realization initiatives. Margaret, thank you for joining us today. What do you have to share this week?
Well, I'd like to talk about the values that we're finding in the STEPS model, the S, which we define as satisfaction. And we define satisfaction from the perspective of a patient, of the physician, and of the staff. And some interesting stories here of what each of these have found and have expressed. We have a story, for example, from Baylor Scott and White. They report that they're able to get real-time feedback on their provider performance, and because of that, phone calls to address patient issues have been done increasingly within the same day. They're now up to 70% of those phone calls being addressed the same day that they're made. The patient doesn't have to wait. We found that in the Greater Rochester IPA, there was among the patients a 50% reduction in complaints because they had improved turnaround on their prescription renewals, dropped from 1 week to 24 hours, which any of us in that role would very much appreciate, that kind of a responsiveness from our provider office.
And fewer complaints equals happier patients and happier everyone, right?
Happier patients and a happier community and more people coming to see us. So this is great for patients. Another we're seeing is increased use, and we'll see this throughout the project, increased use of telehealth. And now we're finding that our reports are about reduced patient travel costs. Avera Health reported that they were able to reduce patient travel costs by $46,000 a month. So to a patient, again, that's important. They're saving gas and time at work. Let's also talk a little bit about the physician perspective. And we found some interesting comments here. I particularly like one that came from the Alaska Center for Dermatology. They literally put it very briefly as, it frees up the doctor to be a doctor. The doctor is not having to spend time looking through patient charts and doing recording after hours and finding patient charts. They're able to do what they're trained to do and able to delegate what they need to train to do. It improves the physician's way of life. They work less during their office hours and can go home earlier. The Arkansas Otolaryngology Center reported the improved physician way of life, for one. Others have as well. And another that I particularly like that we're seeing here, a value that's emerging, is the improved relationship among and between providers. Finding that the ability to share their data and to access data is improving the relationships between referring physicians and consultants and just among providers themselves. So both, again, very good return and very good benefit for doctors. Staff, this was interesting in terms of the staff's perspective. One of the things that they deal with on an ongoing basis with the paper chart is lost charts. or the fact that only one person can work with a chart at a time. And what they're reporting now, Colorado OBGYN, for example, reported that they're seeing reduced staff stress because they have constant access to the patient record. Hamilton Health Services, this is in 2012, and the way they put this was great. They said the online chart access eliminated competition for chart use. In other words, competition among the staff and providers in the service. The Greater River Medical Group kind of sum it all up when they say their staff won't go back to patient charts, to the printed patient charts. So I think overall we're seeing some real trends here over time in terms of the benefit and the improved morale, improved patient satisfaction, improved outlook of physicians in use of the chart, the electronic chart, as they adopt it.
Those are great examples, and just a reminder to our listeners, those are just a few of hundreds of examples that Margaret and her team have been collecting over the past couple of years. Well, next time we'll be diving deeper into the T-STEP, treatment and clinical, and will you bring some more examples for us in that category, Margaret?
Oh, I have some great examples and wish we had an hour on this one. We have a lot of examples.
All right, well, we'll get to it next week. Thank you once again.
Oh, thank you.
There's a new HIMSS conference that will bring together healthcare leaders and innovators from around the world. The HIMSS Connected Health Conference will be held November 8th through the 11th in the Washington, D.C. area. The conference features three summits in one and includes our industry-leading mHealth Summit, now in its seventh year, plus the new Cybersecurity Summit and the new Population Health Summit. Register for one summit and gain access to all three. We encourage you to register today. Visit www.hymsconnectedhealth.org for more details. You've been listening to Steps to Value. We'd like to thank our guests for today's episode, Greg Wolverton, Jonathan French, and Margaret Schulte. Next week, we'll continue our exploration of the HIMSS STEPS framework, discussing the T-STEP, treatment and clinical. We hope you join us then. What did you think of the podcast? Any suggestions for people we should be speaking with? Do you have your own value story to share? Please reach out to us at value@hims.org. I'm Rod Pihowski. See you next time on Steps to Value.